Yes, 1968 was a special year. The Russians invaded Czechoslovakia. Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy were assassinated. And youth rebellion reverberated across Europe and America, spreading from its fulcrum of May 68 in Paris. These events became so much more than the sum of their parts, starting with Nanterre University students demanding to sleep in mixed dorms, leading to mass riots, the Sorbonne occupied, pitched battles with police using cobblestones ripped from the footpaths, etc., all within 6 weeks. Then striking workers joined the fray, and their general strike brought France to a complete standstill. That radical student-worker convergence almost toppled the government. On the night of the barricades, May the 10th, it said France came closer to revolution than at any time since 1789. But now, half a century on, the country's divided on how to commemorate it all, another issue firmly on the desk of the man who's just visited us, President Macron. So we've invited not one, but three French experts to discuss May 68, the myths, the fallout, the legacy. Journalist, writer and broadcaster Agnès Poirier joins us from Paris, as does Adam Plowright, an AFP correspondent and the first to produce a book on the young president, and Dr. Jocelyn Blomfeld, a research assistant at Monash University, who was there at Ground Zero, Nanterre University, in the late 60s. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, Geraldine.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
There were other student uprisings in Europe and America before and after May 68, but in no other country did a student rebellion almost bring down a government. What made the events in France come close to what could genuinely have been called a revolution? Agnès?
Well, I think it's just because it happened in Paris, as always. You know, there's this iconic moment, and for some reasons we have the best photographers of the world flocking there to document the events, and so of course we can look back in time, you know, in for instance during the liberation of Paris. So it's really it's the intensity, I would say, that made it quite unique, and the spirit. You mentioned 1789, but we've had quite a lot of revolutions since 1789. There was 1830, there was 1848, of course, and the Commune, yes. 1870, and much more dramatic, actually, than 1968. So, you know, each time there's a, you know, the feeling that the world is holding its breath, thinking, oh no, they are at it again.
Well, quite. It is said that no one predicted the May 68 uprising in France, that it was a sudden explosion that came out of the blue. But there was a very interesting article that appeared in Le Monde just before the student kicked off about France being bored. How much of the student rebellion was a revolt against dullness and President de Gaulle having been in power for 10 years?
Well, yes, I think, you know, that article in Le Monde really caught the mood of the nation. Something had to give. You know, it was what May 68 is very much the symbol of, is the mutation from an older society to a new one. You know, it's really a mutation, a transformation, the first foray into modernity, in a way. And I think we very much in France, we say that 68 was the beginning of postmodernism, and which we're still dealing with now. Yeah. And we had inherited, you know, the 50s and that felt, compared to the 40s, of course, like a very liberating period. But for anyone who hadn't actually lived through the war, they needed a change. And also, as you mentioned, Charles de Gaulle was becoming a very old man in had been, of course, the hero of France 30 years earlier. But he was now at the end of his life and himself was bored.
Well,
something had to give.
There's a great line, and I want to come to Jocelyn in a moment, but I just couldn't resist this. The Independent newspaper had this marvellous discussion about France and under de Gaulle and the very sort of conservative society that was there. We may not realise it now. The generals wanted a modern, dynamic France rooted in an old, conservative and non-dynamic social system. So, you know, there was this real mismatch there in terms of aspirations and reality, by the sound of it, Agnes.
Oh, completely. And also, you know, this is a very prosperous economy at the time. And so, in a way, there's nothing to complain about. That's why they are bored. And yet, you know, they want something new. And I guess, you know, the philosopher Raymond Aron, who was the sort of the philosopher of the right, if you'd like, and Jean-Paul Sartre was the philosopher of the left, and looked at it just a few weeks after the events of May 68 and wrote that very good book, still now very readable, looking at the events and saying, you know, France is such a conservative country, very occasionally, regularly, it needs a release. It needs a sort of revolutionary moment during which they allow themselves to complete unrestraint.
He called it a tragicomedy, didn't he?
Yes, completely.
He did.
And it's a sort of theatre, and it lasts what it must last. It's a national release, and then everything goes back.
Well, Jocelyn, almost. It's interesting. Yes, almost. I'll come back. You were one of the rare Australians who happened to be in Paris in the late 60s. You were a student, as I said, at Nanterre University. What was it like in the late 60s? I mean, could you see it coming? Or, you know, did you see it once it erupted?
No, I didn't see it coming. Everybody was surprised. But what was happening, I think, was not only a change in the society, but a change within the movement itself. The événement, as they were called, started off with what looks rather a flippant kind of issue, that is the desire to share the dormitories. But it developed into something much more important. And the student excitement and the early violence against the police, who were brought in by the government, not by the by the universities, this created excitement among the workers who had been striking at different times for some time. And so the whole thing snowballed. I think that's the first point I'd like to make.
Yes, but was it a sexual revolution? I mean, this is what's so interesting. Once you start to read it, you see that there's layer upon layer here. Like some people say that there was almost I think it was Raymond Aron said it created a social childishness where the favourite toy was rebellion, as many critics said that.
Yes, he did talk that way. He talked about it being a playful game, as though it was something quite trivial. Wasn't true.
Was it fun?
For me, it was fascinating. I was always interested in social change, and I'm a bit of a utopian myself, I think.
I see.
And so I was entranced by what I found. I wasn't involved in violence. I did commit a great crime once. I had an interview across the street, and I couldn't cross the street because of a big demo. So I joined the demo and just stepped a little bit to the left at each step, every second step rather, so that I got to the other side.
Boom, boom.
And a young fellow behind me said, "Madame, what you're doing is not good."
Lovely. That's a nice story.
I was in it from a superficial angle and through friends.
I had
a family of wonderful friends, and their boy of 13 was in the leftist group, that is further to the left than the communists, and he was employed by his group to stand on the outside of any demonstration to stop their group doing any looting or breaking windows or anything like that. So there was a very serious intent by these young people. They really wanted change. They didn't want to be seen as just wild people.
I've just got to, because I want to bring Adam in, because, and then I want to come back to you, Agnes, because Adam, I think it's you who says, in terms of trying to work out its contemporary relevance, which everybody's sort of mildly obsessed by, trying to see what is the legacy, you say, for instance, that they didn't have, the young people, a clear sense of purpose that, say, the US student gun control movement does at the moment, which is fair, really directed, sure of what it wants to achieve, with collective ideals, not the individualism that actually was let loose by this period in 68.
Well, we've got students are protesting again now in France at the moment, and we've seen several faculties and universities blocked over the last couple of months by students who are in some ways sort of seeking to invoke those spirits of rebellion that we saw in the 1960s. I think it is, you know, it is very different, and there are lots of comparisons being made at the moment because we're in the 50th anniversary year between, you know, what's happening in France at the moment and 68. I personally feel that the country and the student movements, the political system, the French economy is so different that the parallel is for me sort of fairly limited.
Overdrawn. I mean, that's quite true. The students in France are protesting over the changes to the baccalaureate, and they are going to have to, from what I read, argue. If you passed the baccalaureate, you could basically go to university, and that was an extraordinary candidature for the French universities. But after these plans are put into practice, you'll have to argue the case for why you choose a particular course, which is different to 68. But what I was saying was the compare and contrast with the students in America who are really trying to get gun control so that they're not at risk. That's, the argument goes, a very different type of protest than this one about the baccalaureate.
Absolutely. I mean, the comparison between the American students, that's obviously a single issue that they're seeking to raise and put pressure on lawmakers in the US. The 1968 students in France were far more utopian. This was all about a societal change that they were seeking to put in place. So their ambitions were far larger and therefore perhaps vaguer and less focused than the American students that we see now.
Mm. See, Agnes, there's a lot of debate about whether it was, when you reflect on it, a political revolution, a Freudian rebellion, or a utopian uprising. Now, where do you stand?
I think it was utopian negation of reality. And as Adam said very well, they didn't have any demands, really. They didn't have a political project. It was so large. It encompassed everything you do in life. So that's why I think it was very much a moment of national release. But we shouldn't. We concentrate on the rebellious students on the Boulevard Saint-Germain, the barricades, because it's they provide amazing footage and beautiful pictures. But we shouldn't forget that a general strike going on at the same time almost toppled the Gaullist government. And they had demands, and the demands were met. Pay rise, of course, and many other things concerning sort of autonomy or self-government, self-governance in different professional milieus. And that was really the risk for the government, that the general strike, which very much coagulated all the discontents within the working class in France at the time, and the students, you know, sort of conflated into that big revolution that didn't happen. So you know, we're talking about two different things happening at the same time.
Coming together for a perfect storm. Let me just tell listeners, Agnes Poirier, Adam Plowright and Dr. Jocelyn Bloomfield are joining us, I'm delighted to say, to wrestle with the legacy of May 68 and how it's playing out in modern France. And it is true, isn't it? I suppose, Jocelyn, really, did you get a sense that the students wanted to collaborate with the unionists? Because the unionists, as I understand it, were divided. The leaders didn't want to actually join the student protest, but they did eventually.
That's a good question. I didn't have that feeling, but I did know that there were many students who were serious and planning. For example, there were strategies being devised by people who came, like Cohn-Bendit, who's still around in the Greens movement now.
Yes, he was the German-Frencher, and of course he's actually decried it in a sense. He's gone on to be a very mainstream man, hasn't he, in the European Parliament.
Yes, now, if you think of the numbers, that's what happened to most of them. once the fun was over for many of them, they went back to a fairly bourgeois existence and enjoyed the 70s. And then a few, who were mostly on the extreme left, became quite serious. Some are parliamentarians now. So that there was a feeling among the students that not everybody was really planning things or able to control the unions or even interested in that. It was greatly inconvenient for most French people what was going on from the unions, but they really needed to get recognised and to have their pay rises and so on.
And of course there was a counter-demonstration, a huge one of about a million people, wasn't there,
yes,
supporting
yes.
De Gaulle. So yes. you had again the vista of a divided country.
Absolutely. The country was divided by the revolution. I think there was a demographic element too in what happened with the students. The university was expanding and putting up new institutions which were at first all under the Sorbonne. So it was Paris 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, and so on. But later on, these institutions became independent so that the campus I was on, which was Nanterre, where it all started, but I wasn't involved in that because I wasn't living in a dormitory. But that is now a separate university.
Right.
And others are too.
It is extraordinary, actually, Adam, when you look at the explosion, total explosion. I mean, in Australia, it's true there was a sevenfold rise in people doing tertiary education from the 50s into under Menzies, which always surprises me. But I think it was more than that in France. So there was this amazing change happening to the population of people coming into education. Now, that's different now, isn't it?
There is. I mean, a lot of the reforms at the moment are about controlling the numbers of people who do go into higher education in France, which does remain something which is based on very egalitarian principles, and the idea is to encourage as many people as possible to go into higher education. So providing you pass your high school finishing exam, the famed baccalaureate, there is still, in theory, a place guaranteed for you in higher education. So there is that policy of encouraging people to go to university is still very much alive and kicking in France at the moment.
And in terms of what you're looking at now, do you see that the university, protesters in particular, are they behaving in a collective fashion or an individualist fashion? Because one of the most interesting observations that a few people have made is that actually what was released in May 68 was an individualism. Not obvious maybe at the start, but that individualism that maybe led to sort of consumerism, to the very capitalism which we're living through now and critiquing was mm-hmm. given oxygen by those demonstrations.
I think some of the student demonstrations that we're seeing now, the rallying point for that is that they see President Macron as trying to undermine this egalitarian principle that in theory every French student should have a place in French university. So the protests, insofar as they exist now, and they're still relatively small, is all about trying to defend the idea of sort of, you know, collectivism that everybody should have that opportunity. Obviously, France as generally as a country, and as we've seen as in most of the West after 1968, the trend is very much towards individualism and not collectivism.
And what are the unions protesting about now then?
What we've seen for the union is a slightly mixed picture. The biggest union in France is the CGT, and that was the union which really led the workers' strikes in 68 as well. It's still the most political, ideologically left for a long time. It was aligned to the Communist Party. And that's the union that's really spearheading the protest now against President Macron. What they would like to do is, and they've been very open about this, is sort of invoking the spirit of 1968. They want students and workers to sort of come together as a united front against the president. So far, I don't think they've been successful in doing that. We've seen protests, but nothing nothing, you know, nothing like on a scale of 1968. If you, you know, if you remember, the figures back then are just were phenomenal. We had something like 3.5 million workers going on strike. I mean, the country was completely blocked for, you know, between sort of, you know, 3 weeks and up to a month, and you know, that you really had, the country was paralysed back then. We've got nothing on that sort of scale at the moment. But there are various different groups who are seeking to push back on some of the reforms that, that President Macron is trying to push through.
But you think he will, you think that the country is maybe listening to him and prepared to maybe not come out in the streets, which they seem to love to do, even if they then go back with their suits and ties to work?
I personally don't sense at the moment that there is enough resistance sort of countrywide to see, you know, that the demonstrations we've seen have not been anywhere near as big as we've seen in the past. Are fairly small by French standards. And something Anya said earlier on about this idea of a sort of national, you know, the national release is needed every so often in France. I think that moment came last year with the presidential election, when we saw, you know, French voters, you know, sort of kick out a whole array of politicians that they had become fed up with, you know, former prime ministers and presidents. They all fell by the wayside in the elections last year, and from that emerged Emmanuel Macron, this 39-year-old who'd only been in politics for a couple of years, who was presenting really sort of quite a radical different program to the French people. And I think, you know, there was that moment of national release, and I think now the country is in a my sense of its mood is that it is prepared to give him a certain amount of time to put in place some of the things he said he's going to do, and they'll make their judgment further down the line.
It's not bored anyway. There's a great headline here, because of course we're about to greet Macron, which will, I think Australians will be just totally absorbed by his visit. A great headline saying, he speaks like Obama, but he rules like Trump. And so that'll provoke. And I have to ask you, before we sort of more or less close, Agnes, about what women got from it, because there's been quite a lot of rethinking about the notion that it was a great liberation for women, hasn't there?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, recently the British historian Richard Vinen published The Long 68, and it's fascinating, especially, I mean, I'm born in the 70s, but we're told that 68 was this great moment of women's emancipation, and it is true that there was a change of society, and women wouldn't want to go back to a sort of a pre-68 French society, and abortion, for instance, was legalized a few years later, etc. So it was a great moment in women's emancipation. But the whole thing about sexual liberation on the barricades in May 68 in Paris actually, you know, served men rather than women. It was sort of laissez-passer for young men to be able to collect as many women lovers as they could. So I was very interested in Richard Vinen's look at it now.
Well, he does quote some of the radical students at elsewhere, not just Paris, at Lanchester Polytechnic. This gives listeners a sense. Thought nothing of shouting, "Fascist!" This is about Margaret Thatcher. "Fascist pig, get her knickers off." This is in 1971, which is, you know, hardly suggestive of rethinking the role of women, but
exactly.
Can I just ask you, Agnes, for your verdict? Why did 68 fail? Because it was really all over in about 6 weeks, in its immediate sense. Why so?
Well, at least the strikers were successful. So that's, in a way, a good thing. They had a plan, they had demands, very practical ones, and they got what they wanted, and that was a good thing. Now, why didn't it become another French Revolution? Probably because the students didn't have a political project, didn't have a political plan. It just consumed itself like passion. And that's why, looking back, it's also a very, you know, very elating moment. It was almost abstract. It was poetry. It was theatre, and it was extremely intense. And that's why we're discussing it 50 years later. But it wasn't more than that.
And Adam, your final thoughts? What would you see as its legacy?
It's still something that's very divided for French people. There's a whole bunch, part of the population who saw themselves as the French students were rebelling against that conservative France, and some of those people still reject the whole idea of it. That the students' demands right from the beginning were completely wrong. So it's interesting that we've spoken about what has changed and what its legacy is. I think for part of the country that the legacy was very little. I see it as Agnès talked about, that it's very much in terms of the workers got what are pretty typical demands for workers. They pay rises, greater worker rights, and I think they were successful with that. The legacy of the student debates that will the student protest. I think that continues to be something that's we're debating 50 years later about what exactly it did achieve for women's rights. But it certainly was certainly a marker in France's recent history.
And Jocelyn, with the benefit of being away from it, and I don't know whether you're still a utopian. What do you think?
I hope I always will be, because I think utopians have to come to grips with the world around them. And people at the time of that revolution were trying to do that, whether they were workers or unionists or students, or perhaps some of the parents at home who were confused about what was going on. They were all struggling with some change that they couldn't understand.
I suppose it'll be interesting to see whether Macron, who very much, I suppose, is arguably a product of that time, but who seems to be harking back to more stability. I suppose, Agnès, very quickly from you, what is his commentary going to be on 68?
Well, it's interesting. Back in October last year, there were plans of actually celebrating the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of May 68. And then a few months later, they said, no, this is actually against the spirit of 68. So let's do something about the 60s in the world, something more international. And I think he was right, Gun Bandit, or as we call him in France, Danny the Red, the student leader of the time, was even, more straightforward. He said, 68 is dead, 68 is over, get over it, it's finished. And in a way, it's quite refreshing to have, a 68 student leader to say, what matters is the present, what we make of the future, rather than celebrate a revolution that wasn't a revolution. We don't have the definite verdict of President Macron on 68. That would be interesting to have it in details. But I think he's very smoothly and cleverly
sidestepped it.
Moved. Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting. Look, thank you all very much indeed for chancing your arm at this. Agnès Poirier, Adam Plowright, and Jocelyn Blomfield. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Goodbye, and thanks again.